Perhaps the most profound issue surrounding my receipt of this prize is the fact that I am the Commander-in-Chief of a military, of a nation, in the midst of two wars. One of these wars is winding down. The other is a conflict that America did not seek, one in which we are joined by 42 other countries, including Norway, in an effort to defend ourselves and all nations from further attacks.
Mama and Papa were laid
Still,
in bed.
We are at war. And I'm responsible for the deployment of thousands of young Americans to battle in a distant land. Some will kill. And some will be killed. And so I come here with an acute sense of the costs of armed conflict, filled with difficult questions about the relationship between war and peace and our effort to replace one with the other. Now, these questions are not new. War in one form or another appeared with the first man. At the dawn of history, its morality was not questioned. It was simply a fact, like drought or disease. The manner in which tribes and then civilizations sought power and settled their differences. And over time, as codes of law sought to control violence within groups, so did philosophers, clerics, and statesmen seek to regulate the destructive power of war. The concept of a just war emerged, suggesting that war is justified only when certain conditions were met. If it is waged as a last resort or in self-defense, if the force used is proportional, and if, whenever possible, civilians are spared from violence.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Politicians hide themselves away. They only started up the war. Why should they go out to fight? They leave that to the
matter if the war is not real, or when it is, victory is not possible. The war is not meant to be won. It is meant to be continuous. The essential act of modern warfare is the destruction of the produce of human labor. A hierarchical society is only possible on the basis of poverty and ignorance. In principle, the war effort is always planned to keep society on the brink of starvation. The war is waged by the ruling group against its own subjects, and its object is not victory over Eurasia or East Asia, but to keep the very structure of society intact.
I think there's an important connection, you know, between truth and democracy. You can't really think of your country as a democracy if people don't know the truth. And what we are misinformed about is not just the present, but the past. And that is especially important, because if you're lied to about the past, you're not really in a position to judge what you are told about the present. And anybody in authority can get up in front of the microphone and tell you that we must go to war for this reason or that reason.
We're never going to give in. We'll never accept anything less than total victory.
And if you don't know any history, if you don't know anything about our past, you have no basis for challenging what you are being told. So we call ourselves a democracy, and we, you know, like to think that it's very simple. And there are the bad states, and there are the good states, and we're the good state. And, you know, that kind of sort of Manichaean a division of the world into democracies and not democracies is very, very dangerous. because then those countries which are designated as democracies think that they have a blank check to do whatever they want in the world, and it'll be okay.
We're never going to give in. We'll never accept anything less than total victory.
But now in darkness, world stops turning. As you hear the bodies burn, no more war picks up the power. Hand of God has struck the hour. Day of judgment, God is calling. On their knees, the war pigs crawling, begging mercy for their sins. Oh Lord, Satan's laughing, spreading his wings. Time will tell on their power minds, making war for fun, treating people just like pawns and chains until the judgment day comes. Politicians hide themselves away. They only started up the war. Why should they go out to fight? They leave that to the poor.
The Nobel Prize for Peace was also a commission to work harder than I had ever worked before for the brotherhood of man. This is a calling that takes me beyond national allegiances.
About the shape I'm in, I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. But don't ask me what I think of you, I might not give the answers that you want me to.
The more sophisticated surely realize that we are on the side of the wealthy and the secure, while we create a hell for the poor. Somehow this madness must cease. We must stop now. I speak as a child of God and brother to the suffering poor of Vietnam. I speak for those whose land is being laid waste, whose homes are being destroyed, whose culture is being subverted. I speak for the poor of America who are paying the double price of smashed hopes at home and death and corruption in Vietnam. I speak as a citizen of the world, for the world as it stands aghast at the path we have taken. I speak as one who loves America, to the leaders of our own nation. The great initiative in this war is ours. The initiative to stop it must be ours.
Now when I talked to God, I knew he'd understand. He said, stick by me and I'll be your God in hand. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to.
We as a nation must undergo a radical revolution of values. A true revolution of values will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our past and present policies. A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. With righteous indignation, it will look across the seas and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, and South America, only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of the countries and say this is not just. It will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of Latin America and say, this is not just. The Western arrogance of feeling that it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. A true revolution of values will lay hands on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of people normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields, physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense and on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual doom.
Please tell me the reason behind the colors that you fly. Love just one nation. Say you're sorry. There is no other choice. God bless the people now who cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies. Bring and burning pain. So I sing out to the masses, stand up if you're still sane. All of us gone crazy, I sing this one refrain. We can chase down all our enemies. Bring them.
but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa, we may even find a solution, to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. I send power to the
These are the times for real choices and not false ones. We are at the moment when our lives must be placed on the line if our nation is to survive its own folly. Every man of humane convictions must decide on the protest that best suits his convictions. But we must all protest.
Who's afraid of the sun? Who would question the goodness of the mighty? We who banish the threat. When your little ones all go nighty-nighty, well, there's no time for doubt right now and less time to explain. So get back on your horses, kiss my ring, join our next campaign, and the empire grows with the news that we're winning, with more fear to conquer and more gold thread for spinning, bright as the sun shining on everyone. Some would say that we forced our word, find that ingenuously churlish. Words are just words. Don't be so pessimistic, weak and girlish. We like strong, happy people who don't think there's something wrong with pride. Work makes them free, and we spread that freedom far and wide, and the empire grows. The sea the sun, even Christ loving ones. And we'll kill the terrorizers and a million of the racists. But when our people torture you, that's a few random cases. Don't question the sun, it doesn't help anyone. But the journalist cried out when it was too late to stop us. Everyone had awakened to the dream they could enter our colossus. And now I'm right, yeah, you said I'm right. There's nothing that can harm me, 'cause the sun never sets on my dungeons or my army. And the empire fell on its own. Somewhere.
if you knew some history, you would not be prone to the notion that the United States is somehow an exception in the world.
We're never going to give in. We'll never accept anything less than total victory.
This notion of American exceptionalism is something that is so strong in our culture, in our education, that it constitutes sort of a fundamental lie that protects the actions of any administration from really no close scrutiny. When the government is in control of the media, and when the media, in its cowardly way, goes along with the government and agrees and approves of everything that the government does, and then whatever common sense people have is somehow pushed to the side and is taken over by this kind of hysteria about terrorism, and therefore, well, anything we do that the president says against terrorism, I guess, is the right thing to do. But I think what is happening now is that more and more people are thinking about that, and more and more people are thinking, well, are we safer now as a result of two wars? Are we safer now that we've killed more people in Afghanistan than died in the Twin Towers? Are we safer now that we have driven hundreds of thousands of people in Afghanistan out of their homes as a result of our bombing? And that the Taliban, which we paraded as the reason we got rid of the Taliban, is still around in Afghanistan and controls a good part of the country. It seems we are creating more terrorists by what we're doing. You know, the idea of a war on terrorism is, of course, self-contradictory. I mean, aside from the fact that a war on terrorism breeds more terrorists, war itself is terrorism. I mean, that's what war is. War, I mean, what is, you know, when you start a massive air attack on the cities of a country, and you say we're engaging in a campaign of shock and awe, that you're describing terrorism.
This is a rich man's war. What is a poor man fighting for? This is a rich man's war. What is a poor man fighting for? Mothers and fathers are crying because their children are dying. Mothers and fathers are crying because their children are dying. This is a rich man's war. What is a poor man fighting for? This is a rich man's war. What is a poor man fighting for? Bush told them a lot, and they don't know why. Bush told them a lot, and they don't know why. This is a rich man's war. What is a poor man fighting for?
Desert, there's a soldier lying dead. Vultures pecking the eyes out of his head. Another day that could have been me there instead. Nobody loves me here. Nobody loves me here. That's gonna kill me.
dirt's gonna kill me.
You hit that booby trap and you're in pieces. With every bullet your risk increases. Old Alibaba is a different species. Nobody loves me here, nobody loves me here.
Dad's gonna kill me. And Dad's gonna kill me. I'm dead meat in my heartbeat, Frankenstein. I hit the roadblock somehow, I never hit the mine. And that's the run like the luckiest time. And Dad's gonna kill me.
Home if I can live through today. Before I came out here, I never used to pray. Nobody loves me here, nobody loves me here.
And Dad's gonna kill me.
Well, Dad's in a bad mood, Dad's got the blues. It's someone else's mess that I didn't choose. At least we're winning on the Fox Evening News. Nobody loves me here, nobody loves me here.
Dad's gonna kill me. Dad's gonna kill me. Don't put your way out and didn't come back. I'm the wire of prayer like I told you, Mac. But then we shovel him into you and suicide.
That stranger walking in my dreams. Who's that stranger casting shadow across my heart? Who's that stranger? I dare speak his name. Must be old death a walking. Must be old death a walking.
Dad's gonna kill.
Seven muzzle monkeys standing in a row, standing waiting for that sandbox to blow. Sitting targets in the Wild West show. Nobody loves me here, nobody loves me here.
Dad's gonna kill me. Dad's gonna kill me.
First four trips over to Iraq, I went over and reported specifically on how the occupation was affecting the Iraqi people. So I got to go see things like the aftermath of when a U.S. patrol would be attacked and soldiers would just start firing randomly at anything that moved. So I got to go see countless Iraqis killed by that random gunfire and go into the hospitals and see the children and the women and the families left behind when Iraqi men were killed. I got to go into Fallujah and see what happens when the Air Force drops 2,000-pound bombs in urban areas and cluster bombs, and what happens to human beings when they're hit with things like white phosphorus incendiary weapons. And so needless to say, after doing this for about 8 months inside of Iraq, I had a bit of rage against the U.S. military and specifically against soldiers in the military. War is a very dehumanizing thing. And certainly soldiers are dehumanized when they join the military to enable them to be able to go do things like occupy countries and kill people. But also people on the receiving end of that, Iraqis, people in Afghanistan, and also journalists that cover that side of it, we all become dehumanized by war. And that's what happened to me, to the point where I had so much rage after 8 months of reporting inside of Iraq between 2003 and 2005 that my best case solution of what I thought would happen to be a solution to the occupation of Iraq was basically, everyone in the military needed to be behind bars as soon as possible, regardless of their position. And that was basically the best I could do. I mean, I had severe PTSD. I was completely enraged by what I'd seen, and I couldn't understand how people would join the military and go over and do these things to people in another country. Oh, yeah.
Glad I obeyed, but the movie one who stands still is a well-disciplined VC. You guys ought to do a story about me sometime.
Why should we do a story about you?
Because I'm so fucking good. That ain't no shit neither. I've done got me 157 dead goops killed. And 50 water buffaloes too. Them are all certified.
Any women or children?
Sometimes.
How can you shoot women and children?
Easy. You just don't need them so much. Ain't war hell?
If you are there and you intend on surviving, then you need to do certain things. And those things aren't always within regulations, and they are not always pleasant or legal. It is just the situation you are put into. When I was a driver, I was extremely aggressive. I ran cars off the road constantly. It was not the right thing to do, but it was the right thing to do to live. After his vehicle was destroyed by another striker, interestingly, Manziel became a dismounted machine gunner. He claims his resistance to the occupation grew in direct proportion to the Iraqi resistance and not because of any high-minded ideals. He insists, no one wants to be the last guy to die for his unit. And it got to that point where it was pretty obvious that if we did our job, that is what we would be. It was better to just go and hide somewhere. Mosul was a dangerous area and became more so toward the end when we were constantly getting into firefights. I was a vehicle commander at the time, so we would go and drop the dismounted people at some house with an air conditioner where they could kick in a door and hang out and drink tea with those people while we would proceed with the vehicles and bide time out of this visible range. Manziel had figured a way to fabricate on-screen movement of their patrol, as I said, and thereby run virtual missions. Quote, sometimes if they called us up to go and do something, we would swiftly send online reports that show that we were headed in that direction. We would manually move our icon on the map to the location where we were being ordered to go, and we would then move it back and forth to simulate real-time patrolling. And ours was not an isolated case. Everyone did it. Everyone would go and hide somewhere from time to time. It may not have been as regular as in our case, but everyone did it because the workload was just too much to handle, and we were all burnt out.
I got my finger on the trigger, but I don't know who to trust. I look into your eyes, there's just devils in us. We're a long, long way from home, Bob. Home's a long, long way from us. But you feel a dirty wind blowing. Devils in dust. I got God on my side. I'm just trying to survive. What if what you do to survive kills the things you love? Fear's a powerful thing. It'll turn your heart black, you can trust. It'll take your God-filled soul. Fill it with devils and us. Well, I dreamed of you last night. A field of blood and stone. Blood began to dry. The smell began to rise. Well, I dreamed of you last night, Bob. Field of mud and bone. Blood began to dry. The smell began to rise. We got God on our side. We're just trying to survive. What if what you do to survive kills the things you love? Fear's a powerful thing. Turn your heart black, you can trust. Take your God-filled soul, fill it with devils and dust. Take your God-filled soul, fill it with devils and dust. Take a righteous stand, find the love that God gives, and the faith that He commands. I got my finger on the trigger. Tonight faith just ain't enough. I look inside my heart, there's just devils in here. Got God on my side, I'm just trying to survive. What if what you do to survive kills the things you love? Fear's a powerful thing. Turn your heart black, you can trust. Take your God-filled soul, fill it with devil's hand. Take a God-filled soul, fill it with devils and dust.
If we look at overall statistics, according to the VA, of all the female soldiers being treated at the VA, 20% admit to having been raped or sexually assaulted while serving in the U.S. military.
NBC News In Depth tonight, back to the front. The number of U.S. soldiers who've had their Iraq military service involuntarily extended under the so-called stop-loss policy is at its highest since the start of the war. That's despite a Pentagon pledge last year to cut back on its use. NBC's Jim Mikleshevsky takes a look at the effect of this controversial policy.
As Sergeant David White was preparing to wrap up his military career last year, he was stunned when the Army refused to let him go.
I was just in disbelief. I did not think that something like that could happen to me.
Instead, White was sent to Iraq for his second combat tour, leaving wife Crystal and newborn Eva behind. What the Army did is slap White with a stop loss, which allows the Army to extend the soldier's enlistment, like it or not.
Yeah, I did a good thing. I'm back from Iraq. I served my country. The only thing on my mind right now is to get down and serve big time with family. Bought a house, man, rocking the fruits of my labor. That 14 months of Iraq behavior. Better lurk, stay alive, shoot that fucking caper. No doubt, I was making that Iraq paper. Now I'm ready to get on out, become a civilian again, and get on out. No car payments, house all decked out. So I'm set to motherfuckers scream and shout. But success got cost, the army got forced, telling me a nigga like me is stop lost. That means I can't get out, my salad got tossed. They fucked me over like a mob boss, high horse.
58,000 soldiers have been stop lost in the past 6 years. Their service involuntarily extended from a few months to more than a year.
You probably felt helpless. You felt like there's really nothing you can
nothing to do about it.
Stuart McKenzie's stop loss not only cost him his time, it nearly cost him his life.
It looks like the army wants a war. They wanna fuck with a force I never felt before. You can't stop the unstoppable. That's Warnick's law. So I'm fighting for the greatest cause. Where there's a will, there's a way. So don't tell me, hey, that's life, motherfucker, cause you can't get sprayed. Warnick's behave. Nah, this is real days. When shit hit the airwaves and somebody gotta say, fuck you, colonels, captains E7 above. You think you're so much bigger than I am? I've been too good of American. This stop law, stop move. Got me chains and bandstand. If I do drugs, I'll get kicked out. But if my time was up, I can't get out. So the good die young, I heard it out your mouth. So fuck the army and everything you all about, huh?
Army surgeons reattach McKenzie's hand, which now gives him limited use. To this day, McKenzie blames the stop loss. The army says it uses stop loss to keep soldiers who reach the end of enlistment from leaving the battlefield in the middle of a combat tour.
Like Obama said, somebody be held responsible. But some of y'all gonna be held in the hospitals, whatever possible. To pursue my own journeys in life through my own made obstacles. Since I can't pinpoint the culprit, they want me, cause misery loves company. I'm gonna round them up all, eventually, easily, walk right up peacefully, and surprise them all. Yes, yes, y'all, up against the wall, turn around. I got a motherfucking magazine with 30 rounds on that 3-round burst, ready to fire down. Still against the wall, I grab my M4, spray and watch all the bodies hit the floor. I bet you never stop, lost nobody no more. In your next lifetime, of course, no remorse. Yeah, you don't stop. Yo, the army is the only military branch that still got this stop loss in effect. So only thing I gotta say is prepare for the consequences. When people wanna get out, let them get out.
They don't like it any better than I do, but it has proven necessary in order to maintain the force.
But many lawmakers and critics claim the Army has used stop loss as a backdoor draft to make up for the shortage of soldiers for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
It is going to destroy the morale of our troops. We've got to stop it.
I joined the Army when high school was through. I didn't know what else to do. Thought I'd take care of that traveling Jones and maybe take out some student loans. They sent me away to the land of the dead. I didn't know a word they said. I got shot at a lot. I was nearly toast, but it's the ones I killed that hurts the most. Most of the time I didn't know what was going on. The rest of the time I knew there was something going wrong. Every reason we were there turned out to be a lie. I thought of that each time I saw another person die. I was supposed to stay a year, but it kept me for 4. By the time I got back home, no one knew me anymore. Of the man I once was, there didn't seem to be a trace. And when I looked me in the mirror, I didn't recognize my face. I wasn't home too long before the time that I fell ill. It was like the air was thick as mud and I ached enough to kill. I didn't know I'd been fighting in a nuclear war. DU was in my blood and I was knocking on death's door. I can't tell you how it felt to be betrayed at every turn. Like the earth was spinning backwards, like my heart began to burn, like I had to do something while I still had the strength to stand, while I still could run with a machine gun in my hand. And I thought of Halliburton and the military brass and the things they get away with all for their ruling class. But I'm not a pawn and I can't just let it be. And if I'm gonna die, I'm gonna take some of them fuckers with me. I'll spare you the details I did what I had to do. There's a boardroom blown to hell, and soon I will be too. You can say I lost it, you can say that I'm insane, but may no one ever say that my death was in vain. I joined the army when high school was through. I didn't know what else to do.
And working closely with these prisoners was what really began to change my mind and my heart about serving in the war. Before, I just intellectually thought it was a bad idea to go to war in Iraq. When I saw the faces of the people that I was hurting, that I was assisting in hurting, I really began to change on a spiritual level. I looked at these guys and I thought, man, these are young, poor, uneducated guys who didn't have a lot of choices in their life and were forced to fight us. And I looked at the guys in my own unit and I thought, man, we're exactly the same. All the guys in my unit were young, poor, didn't have the best education, didn't have the best choices in life. And when I came to that realization, I felt all my fighting spirit just sort of bleed out of me. And I looked at these people and I thought, why in the world would I ever hurt them? What, you know, why would I do that? What is the purpose of me being here?
The handmade blade, the child's balloon, eclipses both the sun and moon. To understand, you know too soon. There is no sense in trying. Pointed threats, they bluff with scorn. Suicide remarks are torn from the fool's gold mouthpiece. The hollow horn plays wasted words, proves to warn that he not busy being born. Busy dying. Temptation's page flies out the door. You follow, find yourself at war. Wash waterfalls, a pity roar. You feel to moan, but unlike before, you discover that you just be one more person crying. Foreign sound to your ear. It's alright, Mom. I'm only sighing. Like bullets fall.
suddenly find you got nothing to fear. Alone you stand with nobody near, when a trembling distant voice and clear startles your sleeping ears to hear that somebody thinks they really found you. The question in your nerves is lit. Yeah, you know there is no answer fit to satisfy. Try not to quit, to keep it in your mind and not forget that it isn't he or she or them or it that you belong to. For them there must obey authority that they do not respect in any degree. Who despise the job, the destiny, and speak jealously of them that are free. Cultivate the flowers to be nothing more than something they invest in. Oh, but I mean no harm.
The war is but a symptom of a far deeper malady within the American spirit.